La Ville died hard. Mildred wandered through streets of fire. The flames rolled out the doors and windows and fallen in roofs of what long ago had been the center of a typical small Midwestern town, and later resettled by survivors who crept out beneath strange skies after Skydark ended. They had a voice, those flames, a deep rushing roar, a crackle, a hiss. They gave light to the night sky overhead, reflecting off the restless, low-hanging clouds, bringing out the oranges and reds and yellows that already dwelt within them with hellish brilliance. Off to the west, a line of crimson lay across the dead flat horizon as another day died in fire. An especially strong rush of burning barbecue scent hit Mildred's nostrils. She heard a sizzling sound. Not wanting to, she looked to her right. The body of a man lay sprawled half out of the broken picture window of a building faced with some kind of shiny red stone-like sheets. He seemed middle-aged. A blue plaid shirt had fallen, so that his head and shoulders were concealed. The stained white t-shirt he wore beneath had likewise slipped down, bearing a wide, soft, pale back. Nostrils flaring, cheeks taut, she made herself look closer. He showed no sign of stirring as the moaning flames devoured the lower half of his body. Since he was beyond help, she felt rushing relief that he was beyond feeling. Some weren't so lucky. A hand grabbed her arm and spun her roughly.
Mildred, what are you doing here?
Mildred looked up at the captain awkwardly. Even here, there was definitely something between them.
I don't know, Mark.
He was wearing his battle dress and steel breastplate. His black USP was in his right hand. A burn glowed angry on his smooth right cheek.
I guess the question is, what are you doing here? Or maybe why are you doing this?
Rebellion. They killed some of our men left here to protect them. Something had to be done.
That's always what they say, isn't it?
She folded her arms tightly beneath her breasts and turned to walk back toward the train, which was itself ablaze with searchlights, its steel flanks vivid with reflected flames.
Mildred? Wait! Don't be angry. It's not what you think.
A rush of flames from a storefront and the collapse of a weakened ceiling consumed Mark's words. The general held his mesh-faced mask in the crook of his left arm.
Are you ready, Professor?
Doc saluted with his épée.
As ready as I shall ever be, sir.
Outside, it was beginning to get dark. Putting on his own mask, Doc noticed red glints playing on the glass. He paused.
I say, what are those flames outside, General?
Justice. En garde!
The general advanced. He came on with his upper torso held almost square to Doc, and his left hand above his shoulder. Doc adopted a more sideways stance, almost as if playing foils instead of épée. The general thrust. It was a feint, too tight and short to be effective. Doc barely engaged it, and then parried the actual thrust. So they dueled, as the Ville outside burned. The general had the edge in vigor, strength, and aggression. His was the stronger wrist. But Doc was subtler and more skillful. The stiff blades rang and sang. The two were even in honors.
Halt! As you wish.
The general rinsed both their mouths with water squirted from sippy bottles. Doc was grateful. He'd been unwilling to call a halt, but was about to drop.
Your skill is fine.
The general's face was red, and he was breathing heavily, Doc was gratified to note.
I salute you.
My thanks, kind sir. I studied at the Sal of Adelmo Sicilio.
Indeed. And where was that?
Internally, he cursed himself. He almost let slip too much.
In a ville on the Atlantic coast. It was really quite some years ago.
I see. Well, whoever your master was, he taught you well. Shall we continue?
Doc, in fact, was still weary, but he knew better than to thwart a baron. They faced each other again, faceless behind masks. The general's tunic had a stylized red heart appliqued over his sternum to give his foe something to aim at, he'd explained. They saluted each other and began to fence. This time they were more wary, or just more tired.
Sometimes you mystify me, Professor.
How so? I certainly do not try to.
You're reticent about your past, but clearly you are a well-educated man and a well-traveled one.
The last accompanied a touch on Doc's forearm. They stepped back and saluted each other.
It almost seems you have some extraordinary means of moving about the country.
Doc smiled weakly behind his mask.
Semblances can be quite misleading. I see you have touched me again, sir.
So I have. You seemed a bit distracted. Hardly sporting of me to take advantage. Forgive it. Duh!
The general attacked again. Though his arms were beginning to feel like lead, Doc made himself mount a credible defense. The general had a tendency to telegraph everything, which helped.
I am intent on reuniting the United States, as you may know, Professor.
A most laudable ambition, sir.
We're men of the world. At least I flatter myself I am. I know damn well it'd take about a century more than I'm likely to get to make much of an impression, even with an invincible armored train that can travel from one end of the continent to... Ah! Well parried. I'm searching for something.
Are not we all?
A man who can fence with wits and steel at the same time. Brilliant, Professor. Bravo! But what I seek...
He bound Doc's blade, closed up to him breast to breast.
...is the Great Redoubt. No point trying to hide the fact, where the old U.S. government hid away all the means and plans to restore itself after the coming disaster. Continuity of government, they called the concept. Could anything be nobler?
He pushed away.
It could be that a man as wise and observant as yourself might have learned something in his travels that might help lead to the Great Redoubt. It might even be he knew of some marvelous means of transportation, itself a treasure second only to the Redoubt. They could greatly aid the search.
Doc noticed the general's parries were getting wider and wider as he worked himself up. Doc fainted, then lunged in a sloppy, floppy, overextended attack that would have been inexcusable if it hadn't scored a hit on the general's tunic at the shoulder of his sword arm. It forced another break, as Doc had prayed it might. The general came forward stamping, beating down Doc's blade.
Why, dear sir!
I will not be denied! Do you hear me?
But Doc had whipped his own blade around and up, and standing on tiptoe, launched a riposte on the high line. His stiff épée blade was bowed between the cup hilt and the little red symbol, sewed to the center of the general's chest.
Ah, sir! You strike me to the heart.
The general fell back and took off his mask. Sweat streamed down his craggy, reddened face.
That's enough for now. But think well on what I've said, my good professor, for we shall talk again about it soon.